All right, episode number 30 of the podcast is brought to you by First Row Collectibles. Head on over to firstrow.ca and use the promo code FNP at checkout for free shipping on your order. We're also brought to you by Sisu Mouthguards. I've had one for a couple years now, and it's been the best boil and bite mouthguard I've ever had. So head on over to sisuguard.com and use the promo code FNP10 for 10% off your order today.
Ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for the Fight Night Picks podcast with your host, Craig Allen.
It's Friday, July 20th. Big episode of Fight Night Picks podcast. We make our YouTube debut today. We've got three big guests, so let's get into episode number 30. I mean, we're at episode number 30 of the podcast right now on iTunes and Stitcher, but I'm really excited to bring our content onto YouTube. I mean, it's our debut. Hopefully you really like the intro video there. And so if you're new to Fight Night Picks, my name's Craig Allen, and I'm all about MMA news and analysis. The podcast started out in about April, and since then I've been posting articles on the website at fightnightpicks.net. As well, you know, covering the fights live and in person, I've been to NEF, you know, 34, and we also have NEF 35 coming up this September. I'm going to be at FA7 Legends in St. John, and that's August 17th of this year, so really exciting stuff there. And also, you can catch my tweets at Fight Night Picks or at Craig Allen FNP on Twitter. So in today's episode, we're joined by Alan Murphy. He's a communications manager at KSW MMA in Poland. I mean, they're primed to kind of try and take over the MMA scene over in Europe right now. And they have KSW 45 in October from Wembley Stadium. A lot of notable names on there. And so Alan and I will get into that conversation. As well, we're also joined by Nicole Bosco of Fansided, My MMA News, and she's also one of the hosts of the Cage Side Submission podcast. So we have her on to talk about The Ultimate Fighter Season 28. Kind of a surprise to a lot of people that there's going to be a 28th season of The Ultimate Fighter. Most people figured with 27, that was kind of going to be the end of it. Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series has kind of filled that spot in the UFC lineup. So we talk about that as well at the same time. We're going to talk about some of the rising talent in the UFC's women's featherweight division. I mean, I had Tanya Evinger on the podcast recently to talk about, you know, how she signed to the UFC after going on just a great run in Invicta. She went 7-0 with one no contest, that one no contest against Yana Kunitskaya, who a lot of people will be familiar with. And so, you know, Nicole and I kind of talk about some of the women that are going to be coming into The Ultimate Fighter on this season and where they kind of rank and where they'll slot after the season's over and what we can expect. And last but certainly not least, we're joined by Mike Heck from Fansided MMA. He's a journalist there, but he's also the host of the Extra Rounds podcast. And I definitely recommend that you check that out. Heck of a podcast. A lot of great guests from when they relaunched it there last week. So, I mean, Mike and I, we talk about some of the crazy, you know, MMA news that came out this week. All sorts of, you know, breaking news all week. Lots of fights announced. And we pick out some of the more interesting matchups from UFC Hamburg. And that's happening this Sunday. So make sure you check out our conversation with Mike. So let's start out the show and see what's new with KSW. So we're here with Alan Murphy, communications manager at KSW MMA. How does a guy from Ireland get involved with KSW out of Poland?
Oh, that's, yeah, I've asked myself the same question a couple of times. Basically, I was involved in MMA, covering promotions all around Europe, and KSW was a particular interest of mine, and I went to KSW London 3 years ago, which was their first show outside of Poland, and kind of hooked up with Martin Lewandowski over there. He was kind of interested about what I was doing, and I don't know, we kind of kept in touch, and then I eventually left the media side of things and started working for another promotion in Europe, and that promotion folded, and then KSW asked me to come on board then, and I was more than happy to do that then.
Yeah, that's... I mean, you guys have been doing a great job. Like, I mean, you were nominated for at the Fighters Only Award Show as one of the top promotions in the world, so that's definitely going to be quite the honor.
Yeah, I think that was the first time we got nominated for that
award.
So it's like, yeah, it's pretty amazing. Like just to be nominated alongside the UFC and Bellator and the other promotions, or so it's just a credit to the team, because it's like 15 years last week as KSW is running now, and like they went from a hotel function room to 58,000 people last year at the National Stadium in Warsaw, which is just incredible.
Do you get to many of the shows in Poland? Do you get a chance to go?
Oh, I go to all of them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So that's like a good thing. So I'm based in Ireland and I fly out. Although I did miss one there at the start of the year. There was a blizzard in Ireland and we couldn't get out, and I was stuck on the plane with Chris Fields, who was supposed to be fighting on that card, and he ended up not going either.
Jeez.
That was, yeah. So that's the only one I've missed since I've joined.
Yeah, you mentioned like you guys started about 15 years ago. MMA in Europe seems to be booming right now. Between KSW, Cage Warriors, you've got Bellator. They're kind of seeming to gain traction with the big Bellator 200 event. And you never know, they could have a tough Ultimate Fighter type thing over there in Bellator. And then we've also seen, you know, ACB's kind of faltering. It looks like 89, 90, 91 might be canceled. And then at the same time, you know, today, M1 Global and the UFC, they announced a joint partnership. But I mean, KSW is still going strong. You've got an event coming up, KSW 45 in October. Can you speak to KSW 45 and what can the English fans expect to see at a KSW there?
Oh, KSW, I'm not saying this because I work for them, but I've been saying this for a long time. KSW provide a show that's unlike any other event. The first show I went to was 3 years ago in London, and I was just amazed by it. Like, I've been a fan of MMA for a long time now, and I always wanted to visit the old Pride events. I've always wanted to get over to Japan, and KSW bring that. They have that, the razzmatazz, the spectacle, the entertainment value, but they also have like amazing fights. Like, and it's just the range of KSW cards is it's incredible. Like, you have like top prospects coming up, you have experienced pros. And then you have those kind of like fun fights that people like to say, like the freak shows, which I love personally. But that's just KSW just brings a show like no other, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like every show has their own particular style and what they do, and just KSW is unique.
Yeah, like with the YouTube videos and the promos that came out for KSW 44, it was almost like Mortal Kombat. I mean, that was definitely really cool, and I'm sure a lot of North American fans kind of caught wind of it and got interest there. And then as far as 44 went, it was definitely a really popular event. I mean, it was a huge hit. You had Erko June, who was, you know, a big star that going into the fight, I figured, you know, he's fighting a tough, you know, rough and tumble guy. That was one of your fun fights that you were talking about. And he ended up coming out on the right end of it. And then you've got stars like Carl Baydorf, and at the same time, you've got former UFC and Bellator fighter Phil DeFries as your champ in heavyweight. So it's definitely one of the more stacked heavyweight divisions out there in MMA. So, I mean, as far as 45 goes, Scott Ashcombe, he's already announced for that card. You know, Britt fighting at home. Is there any chance we have any more fight announcements coming up here soon?
Yes, Phil DeFries is defending his title against Carl Baydorf.
Awesome.
In the main event down in London. So Phil's obviously from the UK himself, former UFC fighter. And just Phil, like I've been aware of Phil for a long time now. I went to see him fighting Sweden when he was in the UFC. And I got to know him since he joined KSW. And like just his story, like he was in the UFC and he had crippling anxiety.
Really?
He was telling me like he'd be backstage like wrapping his hands, not wanting to be there. Now imagine having to like step out there and fight Stipe Miocic with like not wanting to be there. So he's after conquering that, and he won the title there at KSW 43, I believe. Yeah, KSW 43. And yeah, so he's fighting Carol Baydorf, who just beat Pudzianowski at KSW 44, and he's the longest reigning KSW heavyweight champion, so he wants to get his belt back, and Phil is looking to defend his title in front of his hometown crowd.
Yeah, I mean, it should be a hell of a fight, and before KSW 45 happens, we'll have to have you on again, give a little bit more of a preview. But it was awesome having you on, first guest on the podcast. If there's any shout outs or anything you'd like to plug, floor is yours.
Yeah, just I'm on social media, Alan Murphy MMA, Instagram Alan Murphy KSW, and you can watch KSW 45 on www.kswtv.com, live around the world, October 6th in London.
Awesome, Alan. Thanks so much for coming on.
Cheers for having me.
Awesome to have Alan on the podcast. Really appreciate him coming on. And, you know, lots of exciting stuff coming out of KSW. They have a stacked heavyweight division. And especially where we've seen, you know, ACB recently today on Friday, they finally came out and announced that ACB 89 is canceled, which is actually supposed to take place tomorrow from Cyprus. So that's canceled. There's a chance that ACB 90 and 91 are also canceled. So it'll be interesting to see what KSW does. Now, whether or not they have more events later on this year, you know, we'll have to find that out. You know, they haven't had too many events per year, but going forward, I mean, they're one of the top MMA promotions out there in the world, so it'll be really interesting to see what they decide to do. So right now, we've got Nicole Bosco on, and I'm really excited to talk to her about the MMA. With me today, I've got FanSided and my MMA journalist, Nicole Bosco. You also have a podcast, Cage Side Submissions, on iTunes. Really appreciate having you on. Like I said, I mean, you must be pretty bogged down with the X Games coverage, but how are things?
Everything's good. I'm enjoying my summer. I got my kids home with me all summer, so I'm like not writing as much as I have been during the year, but still, like, you know, running around crazy.
Oh, it's fun, though. I mean, you got to enjoy the summer, especially when they're off school, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's been a really busy week with MMA news. We've had, you know, different spats online, on Twitter, on different platforms. I mean, you had the UFC signing a joint partnership with M1 Global in Russia. We've also seen, I guess it was kind of broken. I don't know if it was Ariel Helwani, if it was your colleague Mike Heck that broke it, but Volkan Oezdemir is out of his fight at UFC 227 with a broken nose. So all sorts of different things going on out there. What were some of the storylines that might have, you know, caught your attention this week?
Well, I know today, I think it was this morning, Kobe Covington and Tyron Woodley and Darren Till, they're like all like jumping around at each other, like who's going to get the next shot. And, you know, Tyron Woodley's pretending like, oh, what's going on? He has no idea what's going on. Till saying, oh, he's running from him. And I mean, it's crazy because, you know, what's the point of having interim belt if you're not going to be the next one to fight? And it's like everybody, I mean, it's possible to talk your way into a title shot. So if he's like doing all this talking, he possibly could jump ahead. You know, we've seen it done before. So it's not like the stupidest move in the world. It's just like annoying from like a fan perspective. Like, what's the point of having, you know, the rankings and the interim belts and all that stuff like that if you're not going to follow them anyway? Like,
yeah, I mean, with Till and with Covington, they both kind of talked their way up to the top of the ladder. And with Covington, I mean, I had RDA winning that fight going into it. I figured RDA was going to blow him away. And then Covington really surprised me. So I thought he kind of earned that shot. He earned the belt, whether or not you want to consider it a belt or a number one contender spot. And then, I mean, to just kind of strip him of a title, it just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I mean, what was the point of watching that pay-per-view if it doesn't mean anything? So, yeah, it's kind of weird.
I mean, they just need these belts to, like, headline events now, which I don't agree with. I think, you know, if a fan wants to watch a fight, you don't need it to be for a belt for it to mean something. You know, if it's two good fighters and they're in the main event and they're fighting each other and there's a good buildup, why give this the fake belt or whatever it is out to these people if you're just going to take it away anyway? Like, because he's hurt, you're going to take it away? Or just because you want somebody else in there, you're going to take it away? Like, they could just do whatever they want, so.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. A lot of the, I mean, probably half the news from this week, none of it really makes a whole lot of sense to myself. But, you know, moving forward from it, so you had that matchup between RDA and Colby Covington at UFC 225. You also had Robert Whittaker, Yoel Romero, and of course, Robert Whittaker won the fight, broke his hand in the process, and then all of a sudden it's announced that as the Ultimate Fighter house in Vegas is being sold for $5 million, and everybody figured they're going to scrap the Ultimate Fighter, we're going to have the Ultimate Fighter season 28. So I don't really know, you know, where this season could go. You've got heavyweights and you've got women's featherweights, which I think is great. I mean, I had Tanya Evinger on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and she and I talked about the fact that, you know, when they're signing different talent to the UFC, typically, you know, women's bantamweight fighters, and they're going to give them a shot, one fight deal in featherweight, and then the rest of their fights are at bantamweight. So, you know, we had Megan Anderson taking on Holly Holm, and I really truly think that the point of having that fight was to tune up Megan Anderson, get her ready for a Cyborg fight, and then there you go, there's your title shot, because she was away for quite a long time. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what we have with this featherweight division. I mean, it's definitely top talent. A lot of the women on the roster, they're coming over from Invictus. So could you kind of give us a perspective of what we can, you know, look forward to with the season of the Ultimate Fighter?
Well, I think, like you said, a lot of them are coming from Invicta. They have some of them are fairly new to professional. As a couple 2-0, some of the fighters are more experienced. But I know Chris Cyborg was pretty upset with the people they chose because he felt that, you know, they were basically somebody that people that could make 135 eventually. Like they are not going to possibly stay at 145. She of course been calling for a while to build up the 145 division. Doesn't sound like they're planning on doing that at all now, especially with the 145 pound tough. They may not stay there. Yeah. You know, we've seen that before. So, I mean, the Ultimate Fighter, they're picking fighters that are going to put on good fights, also can be on TV. So it's not like they're exactly picking the best of the best. I know that a couple of women were trying out. They didn't make it to the show, but they possibly could be signed if the UFC is going to go ahead with the 145-pound division. I know they've done that before in the past with – I remember when the strawweight division was on Tough, they signed Paige VanZant outside of it and a couple other people. So in terms of the show, I mean, they want personalities, of course, so that's, like, one thing they're going for. And they have some talented fighters on there as well, you know? So, I mean – they're going to be along with the heavyweight men, which I think is always fun. Like when they did that, the season when they had the men and the bantamweight women on there together, like that was a fun, like you're just going to watch it to see the drama and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so, I mean, even if they're doing away with Tough, a lot of people are like, oh, you know, Contender Series kind of like takes over, like where Tough ended off, but it's not exactly the same. Cause it's not like you don't get all like the, like fun drama and like the, you know, the goofiness and stuff like that, which I personally like watching that. Like, that's kind of why I like got into Tough to begin with. Cause it's like, you see the training first of all, which I really like, and it's like goofy, you know, like that's what I like, but I mean, you know, to each his own. So yeah.
Like, yeah. I like the Tough brand. I like the idea. Like you said, I mean, it's a behind the scenes look. You don't really get mm-hmm. that with Contender Series. You get, you know, like a 1 minute or a 2 minute explanation of where this fighter came from and whatnot. But with the Ultimate Fighter, and I mean, especially this season, like some of the names, Katharina Lehner, she just fought for the Invicta title against Canadian Sarah Kaufman. You had Pani mm-hmm. Kanzad. I mean, she's kind of, you know, on an upswing right now. I know she just competed in, Danish MMA right after fighting in Invicta. So, I mean, she's kind of on an upswing. Larissa Pacheco, I mean, she's like a true featherweight right there too. So she'd be good to have, you know, in the UFC. But yeah, it's really weird, you know, the way that they created this division just for Cyborg, and then they haven't really filled it up with talent. So it's mm-hmm. it's kind of been difficult. I know with the flyweight division, I was pretty critical of it at the start because, you know, you had Modafferi and Montano, and that you had that fight, and then there was kind of, you know, it just fizzled out. But now they've mm-hmm. started to pool, you know, the division and started to fill up a little bit more. And to your point, I mean, the Contender Series, I love it because it's kind of an amalgamation of all the regional shows, more or less in North America. And then you kind of have the best of the best fighting it out in front of Dana White. They're giving it their all. They're going for the contract. And we've seen a lot of highlight reel finishes. As opposed to, you know, Ultimate Fighter, you can kind of groom a prospect a little bit. And the fights matter for sure, but not mm-hmm. as much. Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what they do with the featherweight division. And it'll be interesting to see what Cyborg does. Do you think that she's going to end up fighting Amanda Nunes before the end of the year?
I do think she'll wind up fighting Amanda Nunes. I think she'd be silly not to, because that's probably the biggest fight that's on the cards for her right now, because I don't see anybody else being able to pull out a fight like that right now, especially if they're signing whoever's on Tough, say they all get into the division. Cyborg has like 2 fights left, I think she said, till March. So if she goes, the division may be going too. You know, like they're signing, the UFC is smart. They know what they're doing. They're signing women that can make 135. So if Cyborg decides to, you know, beat on out of there and they get rid of the division, these, you know, whoever's the top, whoever makes the cut can go down to 135, which I think they kind of need people at 135 also, because opening the flyweights, a lot of fighters went down too. So they might be, you know, filling out the holes wherever they can. So, I mean, I think Cyborg would be silly not to take the Nunes fight. If she wants to fight one before that, that's up to her. I still think it can happen down the road. I don't know if it's going to happen, you know, before December. Amanda Nunes says she's out till December anyway, so I don't see why not.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, one of the most interesting storylines out there in MMA right now. And to me, I think the fight will happen, but I think right after the fight happens, Cyborg hops on over to boxing. I mean, she's got Jason Perillo as her coach, probably one of the better boxing coaches out there. She was at, you know, Cecilia Breakhouse's boxing event there in May. I think that was on the Triple G card. And she fought Kaylee Reyes, and she won. And Cyborg was out there with a, what did it say? Cyborg
Breakhouse. Yeah, she had the shirt.
Yeah, the shirt. And they're going to fight. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. And, I mean, turning gears a bit, we've got Invicta 30 this weekend. You know, there's that. There's LFA. There's Cage Warriors. There's M1. There's so much fighting. What are some of the fights that you're looking forward to this weekend?
Honestly, I haven't really been paying that much attention to, like, what's going on outside the UFC because I've been busy. I haven't even been on social media as much as I usually am because I'm, like, following these two little kids around. But so I haven't really been paying too much attention to those cards. I mean, even the UFC this weekend, I haven't really given it my full attention because it's not, like, you know, it doesn't have a lot of draw to it. It's on a Sunday, which is kind of better for me. I'll be able to watch it, like, during the day while I'm, like, you know, doing everything else. But as for those other cards, not really, like, you know, have to, like, kind of, like, pick and choose because I'm, like, trying to do everything too. Plus, like you said, I had the X Games this weekend also. So it's kind of, like, you know, too much to focus on.
Yeah. I mean, as far as the UFC goes, like, I did a breakdown of the whole card, and there's a lot of, you know, UFC debuts. There's a lot of fighters. They're good records, but at the same time, they're not household names, and they're the only tape you can find on them is highlight reels, so it doesn't really do much for me to try and break down a card when that's all you're left to work with. But I really think, you know, main event of that Hamburg card was Shogun and Anthony Smith. That one's going to be interesting. You kind of wonder what's next for Shogun. I mean, I don't think he's going to be able to win the fight, but if he doesn't, or if he does, what do you do with him there? I don't know.
Well, Daniel Cormier wants him. Did you hear that?
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah.
I mean, if he wins and Daniel Cormier wants it, he could just, you know, go in there and pluck him out and be like, I really want to face Shogun Hooga. You know, they can make it a case for anybody at this point. So if he goes out there and he wins with a, you know, impressive, you know, showing, I'm not saying he's going to get a title shot, but he could possibly, you know, you never know the way things go. You know, Cormier wants it. You know, he's kind of got, he's got the UFC by the balls a little bit because he's got two belts here and he can kind of pick and choose what he wants next. So, but I don't know if he's going to pull out the win. I'm excited to see Anthony Smith in that fight. I just spoke to Anthony Smith actually a couple weeks ago on the podcast and he was looking for a fight. This was before he signed that fight. Yeah. He was looking for a fight and he actually spoke about Shogun saying how he was like, he thought he was one of the weakest in the top five. You know, he's saying people in the division didn't want to fight him because he's a tougher fight than most of the guys in the top five. And he specifically called out Shogun Hua as like, this guy's in the top five and he's one of the weakest in the division. So we'll see what, I'm excited to see what he's going to do.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely fortunate. He's got the size for the division, which I like. And we've seen a lot of fighters. I mean, Smith, Sage Northcutt last week, moving up a weight class and finding success. And I think it's just going to continue. I mean, you take a look at 1FC, they did that. Every fighter moved up, more success. You don't see the weight problems. And yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. Like I took a look at the fight metric stats and you can kind of go off of those because both guys have had enough UFC fights and Shogun's the better striker for sure. Better with the takedowns, better with everything. But at the same time, I mean, he's facing a lot younger Anthony Smith, who you beat Rashad Evans. It is what it is, but that's a pretty big name for a pretty confident younger guy in Anthony Smith. So that should be a good one for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well, I won't keep you any longer. I really appreciate you for coming on. Our listeners definitely have to check out your work with My MMA News, Fansided, as well as the podcast. It's a great podcast. You guys always have, you know, young up and comers as well. Top talent, like you said, Anthony Smith, all sorts of different people on there. So if there's any other shout outs you'd like to give, floor is yours.
No, just everybody follow me on Twitter. It's at Nick Boss, NIKBOS. And yeah, follow the podcast, subscribe on iTunes and everything. So yeah, that's it. Thanks.
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Really glad to have Nicole Bosco on the podcast. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens to the women's featherweight division, whether or not they keep feeding opponents to Cyborg. You know, what happens to Megan Anderson? Is she going to fight at featherweight? Is she going to fight at bantamweight? I would assume she'd continue with featherweight. And then as well with the Ultimate Fighter Season 28, what happens with that class? Do they all end up going into the UFC and competing at the featherweight division? Do they end up back in bantamweight? who knows? So it'll be really interesting to see what happens. Glad we could have Nicole on the podcast to give some more clarity on that season. And make sure you check out her podcast, Cage Side Submissions, on iTunes and any other podcatchers that you might be listening to. So at this time, I'd like to thank my sponsors. We're brought to you today by firstrow.ca. Head on over to that website. It's firstrow.ca, First Row Collectibles, and use the promo code FNP at checkout for free shipping on your order. And we've had a big boost there in American listeners, so you guys keep in mind that you're going to be saving roughly 25% on your order if you make an order with First Row, as all the prices on the website are in Canadian dollars. And Curtis at First Row, he's got wrestling autographs, MMA autographs, old baseball cards, hockey cards. I mean, when I was a kid, and geez, I mean, even up until somewhat recently, you know, I still have a huge collection of hockey cards and baseball cards from when I was a kid. I mean, I'm looking at some of them right now. So I know a lot of you guys out there are collectors as well. So head on over to First Row. Use the promo code FNP at checkout. We're also brought to you by Sisu Mouth Guards. I mean, I've had a Sisu Mouth Guard for a number of years. One game of hockey, I didn't wear my mouth guard. I get hit right in the tooth, and it came out. And it cost me a lot of money out of pocket, and it was a pain. And I should have been wearing my mouth guard. And with Sisu, I mean, they're thin mouth guards. They're boil and bite, but they're a lot thinner than, you know, your average mouth guard. If somebody were to wear one in the UFC, they used to have a former big-name UFC fighter that was one of their affiliates, but... if you were to wear one in the UFC, you'd be able to talk to your corner people. You'd be able to take interviews after the fight without popping your mouth guard out. You could eat, drink with it in. For me in hockey, it was definitely special because I could yell across the ice for a pass. You could understand me on the bench. And Sisu's recently partnered up with Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation, which is a national childhood cancer research foundation. A sale, or a bit of the proceeds from every sale, 10% will go towards Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation on all yellow mouth guards in the Aero and Junior styles. So you can still head over to Sisu, use the promo code FNP10 at checkout for 10% off, and they'll be donating 10% of the proceeds to Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation. So right now, we're going to transition over. We're joined by Mike Heck from the Extra Rounds podcast. He's also a journalist for Fansided. And we had a really great conversation about UFC Hamburg, as well as some of the biggest news from this past week in MMA. So here's Mike. So okay. Right now, we're being joined by Fansided journalist and host of the Extra Rounds podcast, which I definitely recommend our listeners give it a listen. You know, subscribe on iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. Mr. Mike Heck. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it very much. I was very touched that you reached out to me. I don't get to do a lot of these. Like, I've done Lynch's show a couple of times, but you know, I don't really get to do a lot of other people's podcasts, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm definitely glad to have you on. We had, you know, one of your former guests there in Jose Young's last week. And we also had James Lynch on as well. And I like to get a lot of different journalists and a lot of different people in the industry, you know, get a totally different perspective every time you have somebody different on. So it's definitely great to have you. So thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
And like I said, I mean, relaunch of the Extra Rounds podcast, I think the first episode came out July 11th. And I mean, already you've been able to get some really great guests on. So how did the relaunch kind of come about? Like, it was, I think you guys were done in what, like maybe January, and then it came right back?
Yeah, Mike Dice and Elliot Cepeda were hosting that show from the Fansided Studios in Chicago for quite some time. And then Mike Dice, who's, I mentioned it on my podcast, how much of an influence he's been on me. He got a great opportunity with NBC Sports in Chicago. So he took that job naturally because it was a great opportunity. And the show just kind of sat on the shelf for, you know, 5 or 6 months. And then me and Jose Youngs got to talking, and I was like, let's just relaunch this thing. And he agreed and kind of talked to the higher ups, and we made it happen. So, you know, I'm pretty excited to kind of do what I do and kind of put a different little flip on it. I was the host of the SFLC podcast for like 4 years, and you know, it kind of worked out timing wise really well because one of my co-hosts, his name is Ryan Sprague, he's also out in Chicago. He was kind of looking for a step up himself. So it worked out that I was like, hey man, now you get the reins, you do what you want to do, and this is your show now. And he was very, very pumped about that. And, you know, I got this new opportunity. So it worked out really well timing wise for everybody.
No, I mean, that's awesome. And it's been great the first few episodes already. And I'm sure we're going to get to see a lot more. How many episodes are you aiming for per week?
Probably one. This week I did two because I had the chance to talk to Jay Haran, just kind of sprung up last minute. So we just turned it into a bonus episode. So I'm shooting for one, try to get like two or three interviews per, but if stuff pops up, that's fine. I'm open to that if I have the time, but I'm so freaking busy all the time. So one is probably plenty for me, but if I can get a second one in there, then I'm all over it.
Yeah, I mean, even this week, like, there's been tons of MMA news. There's a lot of different promotions with different events this weekend. What are some of the stories this week in MMA that you're focused on that you've been following?
Well, I mean, it's so hard to say because so much happens. Like, I remember seeing a tweet this morning from one of the guys who works at the ESPN, and Ariel Helwani broke like 6 stories in the first 3 hours. Like, absolutely incredible. That guy is a monster. And I mean, obviously the Volkan Ozdemir thing with all the shuffling of the deck, you got to feel for Alexander Gustafsson today. I mean, opponent after opponent after opponent after opponent finally lands a spot, finally lands an opponent on that Los Angeles card. And now Volkan can't fight because he broke his nose. Then finding out that Sage Northcutt is a free agent.
Yeah.
Super shocking. I mean, no pun intended, but it was very surprising to hear that he was a free agent. He kept that thing so quiet. Nobody knew a thing. There's just so much going on. People are still talking about the Daniel Cormier Brock Lesnar situation and how that's so crazy. And, you know, what's next for DC? Can he wait that long before he fights Brock? Like, should Brock even get the shot? All the different, there's just so much going on. PFL's on tonight. I mean, there's just everywhere you turn, there's new news and there's new things to focus on. And that's why MMA is just a different sport than everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, Ariel broke a ton of news today, whether it was, like the Sage Northcutt deal. I mean, I would assume that, you know, he's probably going to end up back in the UFC. He's probably going to end up with an even bigger deal. I mean, you go off, you know, the last fight in your contract, you get a win like that moving up a division. I would think they'd want to keep marketing him. I mean, he's so young. There's so much potential there. And then as well, you had mentioned Volkan Ozdemir. I mean, it's tough to tell what the UFC is going to do with this light heavyweight division. I mean, the talent's kind of thin. You would assume, you know, with the UFC and the M1 Global kind of partnership that they have going on, there is some good talent in that light heavyweight M1 division. So it'll be interesting to see there. I mean, honestly, it'll never happen, but there could be a chance. Like, you could set up a light heavyweight Grand Prix there. If Daniel Cormier leaves, it's not something the UFC would do, but just the talent that's there, I mean, the opportunity could present itself.
They need new stars in that division so badly. It's unbelievable. Like, that has been such a hindrance in that division for so long, because you see these next big guys like Misha Serkinov is a perfect example. He's the next guy. And every time these guys get an opportunity at like a top 5 opponent, it never pans out for them. Like, it's so crazy to think. And then you see Volkan Ozdemir, and he's finally the guy that broke the mold. Like, he was the one that got through, had big finishes and earned himself a title shot. And shot up the ranks so quickly in that division. It's just crazy to see. I mean, guys like Corey Anderson, I mean, goes on a run, gets that big fight, and just can't get the job done. And, you know, it's happened so many times. Ovince St. Preux is another guy. Like, just when you think he's out, he's only lost like one fight, and then he goes back and wins 3 in a row, gets a big opportunity, and then he loses. So I'd love to see that. It would only make sense if DC vacates the belt, or if he gets stripped of the title, if he decides that he stays at heavyweight, which, my God, why would you not want to stay at heavyweight? He talked about the delicious breakfast he ate right before weigh-ins. He's so happy. I mean, he's a happy guy anyways, but I covered UFC 220 in Boston, and at the media day, he just looked drained. I mean, he looked pretty rough. His mouth was dry. I mean, he's DC, and he's great with the media. He's great no matter what kind of mood he's in, but it just was really refreshing to see him at heavyweight. So I'd love to see that. I think that's a great idea. Maybe even seed the guys by the rankings, you know, 1 through 8, 2 and 7, kind of like you do in any other sports tournament. And then the winner's the champion. I think that's great. Put them all on like a fight night card and really showcase that division in its own card. I'd love to see that. And I kind of want to circle back to the Sage Northcutt thing real quick, because one thing with Bellator and this DAZN thing, that's interesting now, because now they have this like extra money to play with. They really didn't have that before. People talked about the Viacom money all the time, but now with this DAZN deal, they just have this influx of extra income. And I think Bellator is going to be so much more aggressive now that they have that extra money. So they probably see a ton of value in Sage. So he's going to be interesting. I mean, the UFC is going to probably have to pay him a lot more, because I think Bellator is going to offer him a ton of money. So that's super interesting right now.
Yeah, I mean, especially with the welterweight Grand Prix, you know, all the contestants being announced. But to my knowledge, they've only announced 9, haven't they? And they seem to want to have a 10-man system, from what I understand.
I'm not sure where Paul Daly falls into that, because I know he's locked up and He's in the tournament from reports. I think Brad Okamoto reported that. And it seems like all signs are pointing towards daily MVP finally happening. But I just hope that it doesn't turn into a Derek Lewis, Francis Ngannou situation where this fight's been building up for so long and then they just, you know, can't deliver in the cage. So, but I have a hard time believing those two can't do it. So Sage is super interesting. And any other free agent at this point moving forward is going to be an interesting story, you know, with the UFC. Can Bellator just pay a lot of money? I think they will. I think they're going to be way more aggressive now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they said they're going to have the 7 stack cards per year. They're going to have 15 cards that are on DAZN and the Paramount Network. It'll be interesting to see what they do with those Paramount cards as well. I mean, I wrote an article the other day just to kind of throw it out there. Bellator 204 is coming up in August. Hasn't been a lot of, you know, press. There hasn't been a lot of stock put into this event. You've got Darian Caldwell fighting up at featherweight when he's the bantamweight champ for no apparent reason. I mean, there's all sorts of challengers in the bantamweight division. And then you've got James Gallagher, and the storyline there is that he wants to fight Patricio Pitbull, but now it's looking like he's fighting at bantamweight. And he said on Twitter today that he's guaranteed a title shot if he wins this fight. Now, he wasn't clear which division it would be, but I would have to assume it'd be the bantamweight division.
The thing of, I just don't want to see them rush him too fast. You know what I mean? He's very talented.
Yeah, for
he's
sure.
He's also very young. He trains with a great team, and he has unlimited potential. But I think before you even think about that fight, you got AJ McKee getting ready for a big fight. The Gallagher McKee fight is just one of those fights. Like, that rivalry has been brewing for so long. Eventually, those two are just going to have to lock horns. So I would rather see. I mean, I know he wants to drop to bantamweight, but if you're going to fight for the featherweight title or whatever, I've got to see that McKee-Gallagher fight. Like, I have to see that. Like, which one of those two guys is going to break first? Like, I think that's the fight to make at some point, unless Gallagher is just fully content on staying at 135 or if this is just kind of a test run for him. But Bellator does a great job with building these prospects up and kind of giving them the shine and just letting them run through people. I just hope they don't rush Gallagher too quickly, because – you just don't want to see that shine kind of go away that fast for a guy that young and that talented. I mean, wins and losses in MMA don't mean as much as other sports, but at the end of the day, a guy like James Gallagher goes out and fights a Darian Caldwell who just, you know, ragdolls him for 3 rounds, which is very possible because Caldwell's that talented. You know, that drops his stock quite a bit, and you don't want to see that with a guy like that.
One of the big things in Bellator, like you just mentioned, that I like, I mean, you take a guy like Ed Ruth, you know, they kind of give him some fights, they allow him to move down from middleweight, slowly down, have a catchweight bout, and then down to welterweight. Now he's competing in the welterweight Grand Prix, and there's a lot of people in the industry that don't like the way that they do some of these catchweight fights. But to me, it makes a whole lot of sense. I mean, you've got fighters like we had said, Sage Northcutt, among others, that have been moving up weight classes, and I think it's a great opportunity for guys like that to try and figure out, you know, possibly, do I fight at my natural weight? Do I continue to cut weight? What's safe for me? And I think Bellator has kind of got something there.
And I love how Ed Root's progression has been, because, you know, he's just buried on the prelim cards and he doesn't care.
Yeah.
Like, he does not care. He just gets in there. He walks out. No one even, like, realizes that he's coming out. He just walks to the cage, you know, whoops whoever he's fighting, and then he just leaves. Like, that's a great situation for him. He doesn't complain about it whatsoever. He's totally fine with that. So this is going to be an interesting step for him, because obviously he is incredibly talented. His wrestling pedigree is off the charts, one of the best college wrestlers of all time. And now he's really making his way in mixed martial arts, but he's going to get tested for the very first time in this welterweight Grand Prix. So we're going to see how good Ed Ruth really is, or if this is too quick for him. But apparently this is the time for him to shine. Apparently he was a guy that, you know, he was in no hurry to get to those big fights, but now he's ready. So we're going to see just how good he is.
Yeah, I mean, it's great for him. And then you take other prospects, like you got Aaron Pico in Bellator, and they kind of thrust him into the spotlight, lost his very first fight. Now he's on a tear. I mean, body shot knockouts left, right, and center. So it's great to have a guy like that. But they have all sorts of, you know, interesting prospects that they're giving time, they're grooming them. And I really think that that's kind of the right way to go about it. Unlike, you know, you see other promotions, I mean, I'll take the UFC. You take some certain fighters. They kind of push them into the spotlight too quick, and then they fail, and then that's more or less it. So it's a good way that Bellator is kind of grooming that talent. And with the deal, there's the possibility that they have, you know, they talked about an Ultimate Fighter type season over in the UK, something like that. That'd be a great way to groom talent and grow the brand overseas.
Yeah, even the contender series.
Yeah.
You know, you have, there's so much talent there already in the regional level. You know, you can look at what they did with like Bavon Lewis. Like Bavon Lewis got the, you know, got one of those developmental deals, came back with the contender series the following year and just continues to evolve, continues to get better. I mean, you're seeing it with Greg Hardy. He's coming back for another fight. So, you know, that's another way to groom some of these guys. You put them against some of the best regional talent. You know, you can keep bringing these guys back to the contender series. I mean, the pay isn't tremendous for a lot of these guys, but I'm sure it's a lot more than a lot of the regionals are paying.
Yeah.
I know it's a lot more than the Bellator prelims are paying for most of these fighters that are fighting on that. So maybe if you just extended the contender series, I mean, it's its own promotion anyways. So you could just continue to build these five fight cards every week. And I don't see a fan on this planet who's going to complain about that.
No, for sure. I mean, that was kind of the conversation that Nicole and I had. I mean, what do you do with the Ultimate Fighter? Do you start phasing it out? Will this be the last season? I mean, especially when you have the Ultimate Fighter house for sale, what do you do going forward? And I mean, the Contender Series has been a huge draw. It's been a huge success. I mean, you see it on Twitter every week, every other week, and it's finishes. It's people competing on the regional circuit right in front of Dana White. I mean, I've got to go balls to the wall for this contract. So, I mean, it's all action all the time. And hopefully, you know, it continues. I think it's a really great idea on their part, and hopefully we get to see more of it.
Yeah, I just wish the only problem I have is they don't do it year round.
Exactly.
That's literally the only issue that I have. And I kind of wish like some of the times that, I mean, you pretty much know who's going to get contracts every time, but sometimes it's going to be like a 3-round war between two really high level guys. And one guy just squeaks it out in such a barn burner, but you're pretty much convinced, like it's pretty much a guarantee that guy's not going to get a contract no matter how good he is. I mean, maybe like a Nick Newell or somebody like that. Like if he goes out there and has a war and wins, he's probably going to get a contract. But for the most part, it's always the guys with the quick finishes, the quick knockouts. And sometimes like, and I remember interviewing Jimmy Rivera one time after he beat Uriah Faber. And he's like, he goes, my coach told me that, and maybe it was after the Almeida fight too, my coach told me that it was more important to get the victory that I got because I dominated, especially the Faber fight, for 3 rounds. Like, there's no question that I won that fight. It wasn't a flash knockout. No one can say I was lucky. I went out there and dominated for 3 rounds. And sometimes fighters need that. And sometimes fights are just really tough and you're fighting a really durable guy. So maybe once in a while you kind of look beyond the quick finish and the quick knockout because sometimes it's just not possible to get it. You're in that battle of attrition. And the tougher guy, the guy who's in better shape, the guy who just has that little bit extra, you know, gets the victory. And maybe we should look at some of those guys getting contracts as well.
And I mean, you know, a good segue from that into this weekend. So you've got UFC Hamburg, and that's going to be on Sunday starting at 10:30 Eastern for us here on the East Coast. You know, there's a lot of people on this card. It's their first fight in the UFC. Really going down through my breakdowns, it was tough to kind of try and gauge some of the fights. It's tough to find tape on some of the fighters. You can only find a highlight reel or, you know, a few knockouts, a few wins here or there. What are some of the fights on the card this week that you're excited about?
Well, being a New England guy, I'm excited to see the return of Manny Bermudez.
Yeah.
Finally, he gets to fight Davey Grant. I really fell for Bermudez. That fight fell out, you know, the last time they were scheduled to fight, but it looks like that's going to happen. So I'm excited to see him and what he can do. I mean, this is a guy that for like 2 or 3 years, people were telling me, you know, you got to watch out for this Bermudez guy. I'm like, well, I don't really know much about him. I mean, I've heard of him, but now he's in the UFC, got that opportunity, delivered in spades. And now he gets a second fight with a veteran like Davey Grant. I love that fight. I'm excited to see Emil Mack back in action.
Yeah.
You know, that fight against Kamaru Usman was not a good one for him. I mean, people are excited for that one, but Usman, I mean, Usman, like you said, he only gave him 30% and he kind of got smothered for that whole fight. So it'll be interesting to see how he bounces back. But, you know, Mark Giacchese, he's kind of been through his ups and downs. Can he bounce back? But obviously to me, especially kind of what we talked about as far as the depth and, you know, kind of the evolution of the light heavyweight division, the co-main event and the main event are super important. Glover Teixeira versus Corey Anderson is a very fascinating fight. Corey Anderson looked great at UFC 217. He was rolling. He was doing great things. And, you know, then he got caught. And that's what happened. But Anthony Smith could be that kind of like knight in shining armor for this division. I mean, yeah. He retires Rashad Evans, and now he gets an opportunity to fight a legend like Mauricio Shogun Hua. And Daniel Cormier, in a way, kind of made Anthony Smith a contender by saying that maybe I'll just go fight Shogun if he wins. Now Anthony Smith's all fired up, which rightfully so. And Anthony Smith's just one of those guys that can go out there. He's super confident right now that he's at 205 pounds. He's probably not as miserable as he at all as he used to be going down to 185. So that is a super interesting fight. And if Anthony Smith can get a win over Mauricio Shogun Hua, he turns into like the Randy Orton of the UFC, the legend killer himself. So a big opportunity for him. I love the main and the co-main event. And I love the fact that it's in the afternoon. That's great stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and on a Sunday, too. I mean, what more can you ask for? And like you said, I mean, New England's own Manny Bermudez. You've also got New England's own Jeremy Kimball, you know, Grizzly fighting on the card. Training out of Colorado, but from Vermont. And I mean, that fight, it's another one of those ones that's interesting because he's fighting a Darko Stozic, who's 12-1, but a guy who's never been in the UFC. So it's kind of tough to gauge that one there. Bermudez, like we said, I mean, that one's going to be a great fight, and it's going to be a really good test for Bermudez moving forward against a battle-hardened guy like Davy Grant, coming off quite a long layoff, too. So interesting there.
Hey, we got some breaking news here from guess who?
Ariel Helwani?
Jacare David Branch verbally agree to fight at MSG UFC 230 on November 3rd. So that puts a little hiccup in the middleweight division because there's all this talk about, you know, whether Kelvin Gastelum was the right guy to be next for Robert Whittaker. What about Chris Weidman? So maybe they are going to lead towards like a Chris Weidman Paulo Costa fight or something like that. So interesting fight. They're going to make that happen. And Ariel broke his like 431st story of the day.
Now, that's also a good segue into another little bit of breaking news that came out today. So it was kind of announced, rumored, what have you, that Anderson Silva could come, you know, out of his suspension and be ready to fight in November. Do you see a likely opponent in the UFC for him?
This is a no-brainer to me, my friend. Anderson Silva versus Israel Adesanya. That's the fight to make. There's just no other fight. There's no other fight. Unless you can get GSP in there and kind of give the nostalgia dream fight that people have wanted to see for like 6 or 7 years now, if you can make that happen, I'm okay with that. But the only fight to make outside of GSP is Anderson Silva versus Israel Adesanya. I mean, how fun is that going to be?
It'd be a total barn burner. I mean, both guys, like Adesanya is almost like a mirror image of a younger Anderson Silva. So it'd be interesting to have that fight. Plus, I mean, just the way that Adesanya, I almost thought like, that he had such trouble against Marvin Vettori, you know, with the takedowns and whatnot, and facing a tough guy like Brad Tavares, such another guy, hardened UFC vet, plenty of fights and a great wrestler, and he had no issues whatsoever with any of that and came out totally on top. I think he might have been, I mean, DC, it was kind of overshadowed by Brock Lesnar, but I really think Israel Adesanya won International Fight Week if there was a winner.
Yeah, I mean, they got something really special with him. And, you know, I'm one of those people who ate some crow, you know, once they booked that fight. Israel versus Brad Tavares.
Oh, yeah, so did I. Oh, yeah.
I'm like, I'm not saying he can't win. I'm not saying that. But if he gets grinded out for 5 rounds, that just puts a halt to that train. So kind of what we were talking about earlier with Bellator and the UFC and developing talent, you know, he's kind of the exception to the rule right now. Goes in there with a wily veteran on a winning streak like a Brad Tavares and just goes out there and dominates him for 5 rounds. I mean, how could you not be impressed with that guy? He's great on the mic. You know, he's an anime fan. I mean, this guy's got everything that any kind of a fan could ever ask for. So I'm all in on Israel Adesanya. My chips are in the middle with him, and I cannot wait to see his progression. But if you book Israel Adesanya versus Anderson Silva right now, I mean, you got something really, really special here. November, December, whenever. Just make that fight happen. I think that's the only fight that makes sense outside of a GSP fight, which probably isn't going to happen at this point.
Yeah, it'd be a hell of a fight for sure. And then just to get back just quickly to kind of what you had said before with the main and the co-main. So that co-main between Glover Teixeira and Beastin 25-8, his older nickname, Corey Anderson, how do you see that fight playing out?
Oof. I mean, Glover Teixeira has a really underrated ground game. Like, he's one of those guys, like, you just think of the knockouts and you think of, you know, him just staying on the feet and picking people apart. But he's got a really underrated ground game. But Corey Anderson's wrestling is so good. He's so good, and he pushes the pace so hard. So I think the key to victory for Corey Anderson, he's just going to have to be super aggressive and just go after it the whole time because he's got the cardio, the guy's got the work ethic. And, you know, Glover Teixeira is just one of those guys, like, he's the big fish in the small pond as far as like his training camp goes. Like, he's in a small gym, you know, training with probably very tough guys, But Corey Anderson's with Mark Henry and all those absolute animals over there in New York. So I think this is Corey Anderson's fight to lose, just because, you know, he's got that cardio, he's got the wrestling. He's got to get out of his own way. That's his own thing. Yeah. Like he sits there and tries to cruise and do all these things and gets a little too overconfident in the late rounds. If he can stay focused and he can keep that pressure on Glover the whole fight and just really have his body on top of his, just have his arms wrapped around him up against the cage, have a little bit of a clinch war with him, I think it's his fight to lose. But Glover does have that one punch, turn the fight around power. So it's an interesting fight. I'll go with Corey here with the decision, and it'll be a nice boost for him and a nice boost for that light heavyweight division. But you can never count out a guy like Glover.
Yeah, I mean, for Glover, it's kind of a tough fight for him, because a win like that, what does it kind of do to your stock? Do you have to fight Alex Gustafsson again? I wouldn't imagine, but what's the fight to make if he does win? For Corey Anderson, you're going from number 9, you're fighting a number 3. It's a great matchup for him, and I mean, everybody knows the suspect chin. I mean, John Volante, OSP, Jimmy Manoa got knocked out by all 3 of them. And then, you know, if you look at that Patrick Cummins fight, he was totally dominant. You talk about eating a little bit of humble pie. I had Patrick Cummins winning that fight because I don't think, you know what, in 30 episodes of the podcast, I don't think I've used this word, but the MMA math going into the fight, I said, well, you know, Patrick Cummins, Division 1 wrestler, Corey Anderson, Division 3 wrestler, you know, the lock, stock, and barrel, you know, that case is shut. I'm taking Patrick Cummins. But of course, you know, Corey Anderson came out just guns ablazing and totally blew the doors off that fight and had 12 takedowns to 0 of Cummins' takedowns. So, yeah, I think it's going to go Corey Anderson's way. I think it's going to be a decision as well. But, yeah, you definitely have to watch out for Glover Teixeira's, you know, a hard right hand for sure. And he does have an underrated ground game.
Yeah, and I kind of – there are some contenders in that division. Like a guy like Dominic Reyes, yeah. I want to see what he could do. I mean, he's beaten some tough guys. But I'd love to see him maybe get the winner or maybe the loser of this fight. Like it sets up nice for him. I mean, you look at the rest of the division, it's kind of really the same old faces, the same old names. I mean, you got Jan Blachowicz up there. You got Jimmy Manoa up there. I just think those two should just run back one more time at this point.
Yeah.
Peru is who he is. Like he's up and down. You never know what's going to happen. Misha Serkinov's there. I mean, I'd say, you know, throw me Dominic Reyes against any of those two guys right now, unless the tournament idea comes to fruition. Because I mean, this fight's probably for that like 8th spot at this point.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So I mean, you and I were definitely going to be watching out for the Bermudez Triangle there with Manny Bermudez. Jeez, can't even pronounce his name. And then again, Jeremy Kimball. Lots of great matchups on here. A lot of people, you know, making their UFC debut. Like I said, and another one that I kind of. Looking at there was Nad Narimani, who was Cage Warriors featherweight champ, beat Paddy Pimblett. And there's always some conversation around whether or not Paddy Pimblett will end up, you know, making a move into the UFC. But that's basically the card. I mean, it's a pretty solid card. If you got nothing going on Sunday afternoon, make sure you check it out. Mike, I really appreciate you coming on. Where can the people find you?
You can find me at MikeHeck_JR on Twitter. You can follow the Extra Rounds podcast at Extra Rounds. And make sure you follow the sites, Fansided MMA at Fansided MMA. And it's also under at SI_MMA for Sports Illustrated MMA. You know, lots of good stuff. You can go back and check out previous episodes. I mean, some of the stuff's a little bit outdated now because Andre Harrison's about to fight in about 45 minutes at this point. So I talked to him earlier this week, talked to Ray Seffo earlier this week, and gave us a little bit of news on Kayla Harrison, targeted to return next month, either the 16th or the 30th. So that was a great talking to Ray, and kind of he was pretty excited to have the media eat a little bit of humble pie because everyone was so questionable of this PFL idea, which has been really, really a nice breath of fresh air. Jose Young was on that show as well. And then I had a great talk with Jay Haran, who's going to be in The Equalizer 2, which hits theaters tomorrow. So a little plug for him. He talks about his MMA career and a little spoiler. We talked about his fight with Ben Askren in Bellator in 2011. And even 7 years later, he still feels like he won that fight and got the shaft. So he opens up about that. He gives his prediction on who would win if GSP fought Ben Askren in the UFC, how he thinks that would play out. So it was a really good conversation. And I think if you're a fighter and you're in this position where, you know, what's next for me? What do I do after fighting? Jay Haran's a good guy to look to because he's transitioned well. He has no itch to come back and fight. He has no regrets with his fighting career, and he's on to this new career in Hollywood. So really fascinating chat with him. So go check that out. You can follow the show on on Apple Podcasts. And if you could throw the Superman punch at the subscribe button for free, that would be very helpful. Craig, honor, thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Awesome, Mike. I'll have to have you back on soon.
Absolutely.
Thanks. Great to have Mike Heck on the podcast. Really appreciate it. I mean, that was a great conversation, a lot of fun. You know, the what ifs in the light heavyweight division in the UFC. And of course, like I say, you've got UFC Hamburg on Sunday to look forward to. And there's a lot of really interesting matchups there. A lot of prospects that are making their UFC debuts. So it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward with some of these guys, whether or not they get more fights in North America, or if they stick and concentrate it more to the European circuit. You know, you had the UFC and M1 Global making a partnership this week. Details are kind of sketchy. I mean, I would assume, I think rightly so, that the UFC would force M1 to kind of go away from their... They've got a hybrid cage-style ring, if you've ever seen it. It's almost like a boxing ring, but it's more of a hexagon-type shape. And then at the bottom, under the two, there's the two rungs, and then you have a cage at the very bottom, and you're not allowed to touch the ring. You're not allowed to grab it. That's a point deduction. They give yellow cards and red cards, almost similar to soccer. So it's a pretty interesting setup. It's a lot of fun to watch. And a lot of people were kind of wondering, well, now what happens to the old M1 Global medieval challenges? So it'll be definitely interesting to see. Like we said, a lot of MMA news this week. And I'd like to give a shout out to Stephen Rawlings, who contacted me on Twitter. You know, he's been really great. A lot of great feedback from Stephen, and I really appreciate it. And if anybody has any feedback or anything they'd like to say, make sure you comment on the video. Make sure you subscribe and review us on iTunes as well. And I really appreciate the support. So thanks a lot, guys. You know, first episode on YouTube, and I'm really excited to bring even more content to YouTube. So thanks a lot. That does us for episode number one of the podcast and the video composition on YouTube. And we'll see you again early next week.